Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David Latulip. Today I'll be talking with award-winning playwright Christopher Chen about the world premiere of his new play, You Mean to Do Me Harm, at San Francisco Playhouse, which is part of the Sandbox series of new works there. Also stopping by are John Tracy and Stephanie Johnson from Theater First in Berkeley to share details about the world premiere of Gila by Lauren Gunderson and Geetha Reddy. A conversation with Ryan Brown, executive director and co-founder of Switchboard, which holds its 10th annual Festival of New Music next Saturday at Z Space in San Francisco, which will feature, among others, the Kronos Quartet, the two-man band Billy Goat, and the Bay Area's first reed quintet, Splinter Reeds. And from San Francisco Opera's Marilla program, we'll meet Arya Umezawa, who directs the 60th anniversary gala concert on June 11th, which kicks off the 60th anniversary season. Stay with us. San Francisco Playhouse continues its 2016-17 Sandbox series for new works with the world premiere of You Mean to Do Me Harm, written by playwright and winner of the 2017 Lanford Wilson Award, Christopher Chen. Bill English, the artistic director of the Playhouse, directs this new play, which is an original commission by the Playhouse. The cast features Lauren English, Charisse Laureau, James Asher, and Don Castro. And I'm pleased to be joined in studio by the playwright, Christopher Chen. He's an internationally award-winning playwright whose full-length works have been produced and developed across this country and abroad at companies such as ACT locally, Arcola Theater in London, the Asian American Theater Company, Bay Area Playwrights Festival, both the Beijing and Edinburgh Fringe Festivals, along with Berkeley Rep, Central Works, Crowded Fire, Cutting Ball, among many others. Chris is a Bay Area native and a graduate of UC Berkeley and holds an MFA in playwriting from SF State. Pleasure to welcome you, Chris, to our studios.
Nice to be here.
First of all, can you tell us a little bit about the Sandbox series?
Sure. Well, the Sandbox series is kind of San Francisco Playhouse's, I guess, kind of spunky experimental wing. It's lower budget, but it also then takes more risks. So it actually does a lot of world premieres of, I guess, kind of riskier plays that ordinarily wouldn't get a production. So it's very artistically alive and experimentally alive. John Tracy, one of your other guests here, has worked in it too. Uh-huh. It's really exciting.
And when did you first get involved with San Francisco Playhouse?
I would say the commission happened maybe about a couple years ago. I was kind of working on this play simultaneously with San Francisco Playhouse and the Vineyard Theater in New York as part of my residency there. And we just kind of like kept at it. We had a couple of workshops of the play, and now it's finally having its world premiere.
Fantastic. Well, let's get people on board with what the plot of You Mean to Do Me Harm is all about.
Sure. Well, So the plot centers around two interracial couples, a Chinese man and a white woman, and a white man and a Chinese woman, so kind of these mirror images of each other. They have a dinner party at which the white man makes a comment that the Chinese man perceives as possibly being kind of this culturally coded flirtation towards his white wife. But he's not sure. He can't really be sure. But that kind of single little tiny suspicion ends up kind of snowballing into even these surreal places as the play goes on into this almost kind of Cold War style paranoia, where you're actually, and one of the conceits of the play is, as the play goes along, you're actually not sure whether the scenes you saw are real, or if they're really happening, or are they part of somebody, maybe who knows which character's kind of paranoid imagination.
Okay.
So that's kind of part of the fun of the play.
So inspiration along the lines of Jean Le Carré and
sure.
James Bond, or
yeah.
what is your personal inspiration for the play?
Well, I did actually want to see if I could kind of take the paranoia between, kind of the paranoia that is at the center of international relationships, especially China-America, and see if I can then kind of distill those dynamics down to two couples.
Well, a refreshing change from Russia-America.
Exactly. Well, when I started writing it, yeah, it was China was more in our consciousness as the enemy, I think, than Russia. Yeah.
Well, now you're reviving that. Great. Now we'll have to worry about them as well.
I'll do another play about Russia. Yeah.
So what sort of changes happened throughout the development process in the play?
So some big changes, actually. At first, because I'm kind of dealing with what happens or what's kind of true, what exists on the subconscious realm, in the subconscious realm. So perhaps he was flirting. Perhaps he was actually using these kind of racial wolf whistles, but he wasn't aware of it. So, and maybe then the Chinese man was aware of it as well. Then it kind of exploded, and perhaps all of these different layers of the subconscious could exist simultaneously. So I actually was kind of looking at how to express the world of the subconscious in different ways. So initially, I actually had very separate worlds. So there's a central area where the action takes place, and then you have people who represented the subconsciouses of the people, of the characters, commenting on the sidelines.
Oh, wow.
And then eventually I kind of, over the course of the development process, I chose to kind of instead kind of have this mystery, kind of more, a more fluid mystery of, you know, is this real or not? Is this taking place in the subconscious or not? So that kind of became, that was a huge change that happened in the course of the development process.
Mm-hmm. And what's Bill English, a good friend of KLW and the artistic director of the Playhouse, is directing the play. What did he bring to the table, or rather the stage in this case?
Yeah, well, we actually, I think, make a very good team because Bill is, you know, he's a pro. He's directed, you know, he's really good with actors. He kind of understands that kind of, I guess, maybe these intellectually heavy plays sometimes need to be counterbalanced with kind of teasing out what's the central action of the play, what do the characters kind of want in the moment. So I think between the two of us, we kind of struck a good balance.
And tell us about the cast. Lauren English has also been a guest here on KLW. She was doing casting for some time. I think she still is for SF Playhouse.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Tremendous actress herself.
She's amazing. And I really appreciate her, especially because she's, the entire cast. Just to mention Lauren, she's an actress of really great, I would say, subtlety. And in the Sandbox series, we actually have a more intimate stage. So we're able to actually tease out these really kind of nuanced beat work, and we have the perfect cast for it, including Lauren.
And speaking of the space, this is going to be held at the Ruef. Ruef? I don't know how to pronounce
it. I'm not sure, actually. I think it's
R-U-E-F-F.
Yeah.
Not on the roof, but the Ruef Theater, which is part of ACT's Strand Theater on Market Street.
Yeah.
Kind of a new space, great intimate space.
It is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It really is.
And so what will we see on stage then?
You will see, it's going to be audience on three sides, and you're going to see the central playing area with kind of this dirt path that kind of lines it, where characters who are not in the scenes will kind of sit and kind of watch the proceeding. So we actually don't know exactly what their relationship is to the action in the center stage, but their presences will always be there, you know, in much the same way as, you know, if you're talking about, you know, if you have an intimate conversation with your partner, perhaps other potential riskier people or threatening people are always somewhere on the sidelines. We'll actually get to see that on the stage. So none of the characters actually leave.
Oh, wow. So it's in addition to having that tension, it's a psychological drama on that level as well.
Exactly. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. You Mean to Do Me Harm is at the Ruef, R-U-E-F-F, ACT Strand Theater on Market Street, June 6th through July 2nd. Christopher Chen is the playwright. Bill English is directing the cast, which includes Lauren English, Charisse Loriot, James Asher, and Don Castro. Christopher, we look forward to seeing your next creation. What's on the works for you beyond You Mean to Do Me Harm?
Next up, I have another world premiere, two world premieres actually this season, one at Crowded Fire Theater, which I'm a resident playwright. It's called A Tale of Autumn, and that's going to be in the fall. And then I have another play in the spring called Passage, which is going to be at the Wilma Theater in Philadelphia.
Busy guy. That's great. Congratulations. Christopher Chen, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you so much.
More information at sfplayhouse.org. For You Mean to Do Me Harm at the Strand Theater, ACT's Strand Theater, through July 2nd. Information, sfplayhouse.org.
For the sleepy little baby, for the booger man catch you, all them horses in that lot, go to sleepy little baby. Go to sleep, go to sleep, go to sleep, little baby. Mama went away and she told me to stay and take good care of this baby. Go to sleep, little baby. Go to sleep. Go to sleep, little baby. All them horses and that lot. Go to sleep, little baby. Can't you hear them horses trot? Go to sleep, little baby. Go to sleep. Go to sleep. Go to sleep, little baby.
That's music of Bessie Smith that you'll hear as part of the soundscape in the Theater First production of Hela, the poetic scientific dream fate of Henrietta Locks. Theater First closes its first season of in-house new works with the world premiere of Hela by Lauren Gunderson and Geetha Reddy, with direction by Evren Odskin. Hela evokes and explores the story of Henrietta Lacks, who you'll learn about shortly, from artistic director John Tracy and Stephanie Ann Johnson from Theater First in Berkeley. John is artistic facilitator for Theater First. He's an internationally recognized director, playwright, designer, educator, and associate with companies that include Shotgun Players, Playground, Darkroom Productions, and Magic Theater, among others. He's also the recipient of the Kennedy Center Meritorious Achievement Award, 15 North Bay Artie Awards, a Sacramento Ellie Awards, and many others. John, it's a pleasure to welcome you once again back to our studios and our new digs. Hi.
It's great to be here.
And we're also welcoming Stephanie Ann Johnson. If you could say a few words about Stephanie, we're happy to have her.
Absolutely. Stephanie Ann Johnson is many things, and we're so happy to have her as a board member with Theater First, as well as a resident lighting designer for the company. Her voice has been so necessary as we've had a larger and larger conversation about how to build this sort of theater company.
Nice. Well, welcome, Stephanie.
Thank you very much.
Sure. This is an extraordinary story. Tell us about Henrietta Lacks. Let's start with Stephanie.
All right. She was an African-American woman who had cancer. They took her cancer cells and used them to advance modern medicine as we know it. She had the kind of cells that would reproduce outside of the body, which was very, very unusual, which is why they were referred to as immortal cells. She was not compensated. So we have a conflation here of economic justice, racial justice, gender justice, or injustice, actually. And that's just a synopsis about her life. It goes much deeper than that, but
we're happy to explore some of the depth with John Tracy as well about this. And Theater First is kind of taking this different tack now towards productions in terms of the type of productions that they're working on.
Oh, sure. Part of being in this community for so long, and looking at not only the Bay Area theater scene, but the national and international theater scenes, and looking at how we explore these vague terms like inclusion and diversity, what actual steps can we take towards not only risking real adjustment and calibration, but exploring what it would be to have numbers behind that that would check and balance what we were completing. Ours are pretty straightforward, but they're always, and yet they're always adjusting. Every piece, our board, our staffing, our creative teams are built of 2/3 persons of color, at least 2/3 persons of color, 50% female identified, and 1/3 LGBTQIA. It makes us. It opens us for those who might think that closes doors, and has opened so many as to what stories are can be at the center. The first question underneath that question was, if we were going to do that, what did the rest of the infrastructure have to look like? That's what built us, brought us to the idea of being an in-house new works development company, because it's one thing to use words like diversity and inclusion. It's another thing to actually try to center artists in the creation of their own stories. And that's what we're after. Yeah. We've had some successes. We've certainly had some challenges and some big things to learn from. But that's our deal there. Progress isn't about answers. It's about asking the hardest question we can possibly come up with, only to find a harder question underneath it.
Well, that's the challenge of taking a new direction. Dr. Johnson, you are Theater First board member. And new to the board, how are you helping shape things from your experience at Cal State?
Wow, I don't know whether to answer. You know, I'm wearing so many different hats. You know, lighting designer, board member, cancer survivor. So I never know which one of those hats to be wearing for an answer. I've been working, you know, very closely with John and the board through this first season, which I think has been magnificent. And we have had challenges, we've had successes. It seems as though Gila is really an apex of what we're trying to do and what we're up against. It really is a signifier in that kind of way. And I think we're managing it. And I think we're coming together with honesty, with authenticity, with an intention to make things better in terms of the world of theater, to model what people talk about by doing it in actual practice.
When did either one of you first become acquainted with Henrietta Lacks?
I'll take that one. It was
John Casey.
I can remember very specifically driving with my wife to down by Lake Merritt, and one of our many days of just having to get too many things done and no time for anything. But on the radio was Radio Lab was doing a piece about Henrietta Lacks, and we stopped our day right there. We pulled over right by the lake to listen to this amazing story. And I can...
Power of radio.
Yeah, I always. But I can remember that moment just thinking, wow, what a... This is before I even really knew about the book or anything like that and what would happen there. But I just remember going, this should be a play. This should be amplified on the stage. And it was fantastic many, many years later to be sitting next to my wife once again watching the premiere of Gila at Theater First.
Fantastic. And you had such a great playwright in the form of Lauren Gunderson and Geetha Reddy. I know Lauren's work, but tell me a little bit about Geetha's.
Geetha, strangely enough, to just wrap it all back with Christopher Chen, who we just had on here, who will be working
indeed
with us next season.
Great.
I worked with Geetha very early on at the beginning of the Sandbox series at SF Playhouse, and we worked on a play called Safe House. Geetha and I have known each other for quite some time. We're working on another piece with Shotgun Players right now. She and Lauren both have these great, on one hand, great minds, talented, creative minds, and also are so unbelievably open to constructive criticism and scrutinies that will make their work better. It's fantastic to have them in the room.
Tell us a little bit about your cast.
Sure. Well, you have Janae Simon as Henrietta. She's a powerhouse. I don't know how else to say. It's amazing sometimes to watch. All six of the members of this cast are just fantastically dedicated, talented individuals. I just speak of Janae, who really navigates us through this play. And all I can say is I hope that every casting director in the world gets to come see this piece to watch her shine. She's got competition. She has Desiree Rogers as Deborah Pullum, Henrietta's daughter. You've got Kari Moe, who, along with three others, Sarah Mitchell, Richard Palazzo, and Akemi Okamura, are an ensemble that play really the rest of the world. And through their work and reflection on those two main characters that I stated, create that world and also amplify those two in the center.
And set the stage for us. What will we see at the Live Oak Theater? And some wonderful visual from the lighting designer, of course.
Well, I wanted to answer the earlier question first, which was my contact.
Oh, please.
The Henrietta Lacks story. Mm-hmm. I read it years ago before I myself had cancer, and was so moved, both very deeply, deeply sad and enraged. That the fact that this woman did not get the care she needed.
When did she die?
1951.
Mm. Wow.
1951. Mm. She was 31?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how I came in contact with this story. And when I started working on the play as lighting designer, I didn't connect all the dots. I entered as lighting designer and thinking about the visuals, and then I realized that this story is deeply connected to me.
Mm-hmm.
As an African-American woman, in this era, who has had cancer and who's had the kind of cancer, the survival rate of which is very, very low. So as we kept working as an ensemble and as I kept lighting people and illuminating them, I illuminated my own inner sorrows and connections. And so when you walk into the stage, to answer your question,
yes, please.
When you walk in, you will see a big cellular sculptural piece by Bailey
Haikua, yes.
And it is it's up center stage, and it changes color, and it has a character in and of itself. And of course, it's meant to represent the cells of our body and many, many, many of them. And there's a very, very simple setting. There's that set piece, and there are chairs.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a work, a brand new work in progress,
sure.
And brought to the stage first at Theater First.
Yeah.
So what sort of changes might have gone through the process of bringing it to life?
Oh, that's a fantastic. I mean, it is like all of our pieces, and with much love to all of the artists that were in the room for every step of that development. There has been just sweeping changes. Some of that is very practical. This is the narrative structure of a piece that has to find itself. What is the best way to tell a story? But we're also looking at the social and political ramifications of the words that we use, what
mm-hmm.
and the semiotics of what order images come in.
Mm-hmm.
And there were cuts all the way up to opening night, and there will also be cuts and additions all the way through closing, which is part of our development process, which is a time I'd love to bring up, that we also, because we believe so much in development and wanting our audiences to understand that in a real way, if you buy a ticket to a Theater First show, that ticket becomes a voucher. You can come back to see the show as many times as you like on that, so you can watch the growth and evolution of the piece.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And each of the shows will be followed by a community discussion.
Yes.
Moderated by artists and activists
mm-hmm.
from around the Bay Area to continue this conversation.
Yes.
Presented
mm-hmm.
by this extraordinary story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Theater First's production of Hela, the Poetic Scientific Dream Fate of Henrietta Lacks, runs through June 17th, at Live Oak Theater on Shattuck Avenue in Berkeley. For information, go to theaterfirst.com and learn some of the interesting things that Dr. Stephanie Johnson has been doing. Her work can be seen online at lightessencedesign.com. John Tracy, always a pleasure to have you. And Stephanie, let's have you back for your next project.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you.
Go to sleep, love, baby, for the burger man catch you. All them horses in that lot. Go to sleep, little baby. Go to sleep, go to sleep, go to sleep, little baby. Mama went away and she told me to stay and take good care of this baby. Go to sleep, go to sleep, little baby. Go to sleep, go to sleep, go to sleep, little baby. All them horses and that lot. Go to sleep, little baby. Can't you hear them horses trot? Go to sleep, little baby.
The story of Henrietta Lacks at Theater First in Berkeley at the Live Oak Theater. Some Bessie Smith in the background there for you. Well, changing tone a little bit, the Marilla Opera Program's 60th anniversary season begins on June 11th with a benefit gala at City Hall and a concert immediately following at Herbst Theater in San Francisco, featuring some of the acclaimed Marilla Program's most illustrious participants. The 60th anniversary concert will feature performances by Marilla alumni from the 80s, 90s, 2000s, and current and recent participants, including the great soprano Deborah Voigt, mezzo-soprano Dolores Zajac, Mark Marash, who's pianist and a Marilla Opera Program music director, as well as mezzo-soprano Catherine Cook, baritone Quinn Kelsey, currently starring as Rigoletto in the San Francisco Opera. He's a 2002 graduate of Marilla. Amatai and Penny Patty, tenors, as well as soprano Julia Adams and bass Anthony Reed, among many others. Here to talk about the concert is Aria Umezawa, who is directing this year's concert. She's currently artistic director of Toronto-based independent opera company Opera 5 and the creator, director, and writer of the web series Opera Cheats. A former Adler Fellow as well, she was an apprentice stage director in the 2016 Marilla Opera Program, where she staged the grand finale concert. She has been praised for her irreverent, postmodern, imaginative, and quirky visual style by online and print publications such as the Boston Globe, the Boston Phoenix, San Francisco Chronicle, and Toronto's Barska blog. Aria, welcome to Open Air.
Thank you so much for having
me. And welcome back to the Grand Marilinis.
Oh, I'm so excited to be a part of this upcoming gala performance.
Well, this is quite a year, the 60th anniversary year. You got some amazing talent coming on. Tell us what you've got in store for the staging of all this.
Well, I think the gala is really going to be a retrospective of Marilla. The program started in 1957, and since then it has become sort of the premier training program for young opera artists around the globe. It's internationally recognized. And so this gala is going to be an opportunity for us to look back and recognize some of the great people who are involved in making this program one of the best.
And so tell us about some of the talent that you managed to wrangle. I mentioned a few of those names.
Yes. I mean, Deborah Voigt, who is a amazing, illustrious soprano, Dolores Zajac, Quinn Kelsey, who you mentioned is at SFO right now singing Rigoletto. Really, it's sort of a survey of some of the biggest names who have gone through the program. And we'll also feature the current Adler Fellows and the current Marilini as well. So it's really Marilla through the ages.
Uh-huh. And how did you first get involved with Marilla to begin with?
Well, Marilla was on my radar ever since I was studying opera at McGill University. It's sort of one of the only opportunities for a young stage director who's interested in opera to really get a foundation and an understanding of what the industry expects of a young opera director. It really is really just the only place that one can go. So I have been applying for years, and when I finally got that call, it was a life-changing moment for sure.
Well, let's hear one of those illustrious alumni, and then we'll talk more about this year's program. Here's Zanda Sveda singing some music of Charles Gounod. And then more with Aria Umezawa about the Marilla's grand 60th anniversary concert. From the 2013 live performance at the War Memorial Opera House of the Marilla Opera Program, Zanda Sveda with music from Sappho by Charles Gounod. She'll be singing some beautiful music from Samson and Delilah in this year's Marilla Opera Program finale, the grand concert, the gala at 5:15, and the concert at 8 p.m. I'm David LaTulipe here with Aria Umezawa, who is directing this year's concert. She's an Art Adler grad as well as a Marilini grad in the directing end of things. Quite a task before you and quite some artists to wrangle, shall we say.
I'm a lucky lady, let's say that.
And everyone's in good spirits, I imagine, for this sort of thing.
I think everyone's really excited to celebrate this program.
Mm-hmm. And so what's happening as part of the gala itself?
Well, the whole event will begin with a dinner at City Hall, and then we'll hop across the street to the Herbst Theater, where we will have the gala performance, and we'll get to hear a bunch of really fun music, everything from Bernstein to Offenbach to Wagner. So if you are a music lover or an opera lover, I think this will be a great performance for you to come check out.
A couple of brothers that are involved in a current opera production at SF Opera, Rigoletto, are going to be singing as part of the gala, and they're also Marilini.
Yes, actually the whole family. So that will be Amitai and Pene Patti, and Pene's wife, Amina Edris, will all be singing in the performance. It's sort of a incredibly talented, incredibly good-looking family who we've wrangled into this performance.
Well, let's hear a little bit from Pene Patti now, from, again, the 2013 live performance at the War Memorial Opera House, and then more with Aria.
questions?
Penny Patti et al. From the 2013 Marilla Grand Finale at the War Memorial Opera House. From that we heard Candide, the Grand Finale from Leonard Bernstein's Candide. Among the performers this coming, let's see, it's on the 11th, Sunday the 11th at 8 p.m. will be more from Candide, I Am Easily Assimilated, sung by Catherine Cook, along with Amitai Patti, and some music of De Valkyrie as well, sung by Isakaya Savage, a 2013 Marilini graduate as well, and a nice mix, aria, of both the show tune end of things, but tunes, show tunes on the grand level that SF Opera has been pursuing as well, such as Showboat. We're going to be hearing You Are Love, sung by Kristen Clayton, and others. Mignon of Thomas, such a wonderful program.
I think, you know, it's a celebration, and in opera you have a lot of death, destruction, torn asunder lovers. So I think for this gala performance, we really wanted to focus on things that would lift people's spirits.
Very nice, including Debbie Voigt and Catherine Cook will be singing Anything You Can Do, I Can Do Better from Irving Berlin's Annie, Get Your Gun. That should be quite a hoot.
I mean, everybody loves to see dueling divas.
And they duel with sharp tongues as well as swords.
Definitely, definitely.
That's wonderful. So tell me a little bit about what you're doing up in Canada.
Oh, I run an independent opera company called Opera 5. Our mandate is to seek out and nurture the next generation of opera audiences. And we do that by creating really innovative and fun productions. So, for example, last year we did Die Fledermaus, but we threw the Act 2 party and the audience were the guests. So it was a very immersive experience. And we stopped the finale in Act 2 and we threw a cabaret. So there was a burlesque dancer who stripped with hula hoops, an aerialist, a drag queen. And then to top it all off, we had a beer sponsor, so everyone who purchased a ticket got as much beer as they could drink. And this year, we are doing a double bill of Ethel Smythe operas. You might recognize her. She's been in the news recently because she was the first woman to have her opera performed at the Met, but she's since fallen into obscurity. So we really try and curate nights that we think will be interesting to young audiences and will really give them a good sense of what the repertoire is like.
Fantastic. I mentioned earlier that Isakaya Savage is a 2013 Marilini. Let's go out with something from that gala concert at the War Memorial Opera House. He'll be singing this year something from Die Walküre, but let's hear him sing from 2013 an aria, or at least a part of an aria, from Lohengrin of Wagner. Isakaya Savage, part of the incredible lineup for the Marilla 2017 60th Anniversary Gala and Concert, Sunday, June 11th. Aria, I hope you come in again and bring some other interesting news from Toronto Ways and beyond. Thanks for coming
pleasure.
In, and we're looking forward to seeing your work on the stage of the War Memorial Opera House on June 11th.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Isakaya Savage, a 2013 Merilini. He's returning on June 11th for the 60th anniversary gala of the Merila Opera Program. Tickets for the gala are sold out, but there are some tickets still available for the grand performance in the War Memorial Opera House at 8 p.m. on June 11th. Go to sfopera.com for more information. Well, on June 10th at Z-Space, Switchboard Music will celebrate its 10th anniversary with a six-hour festival featuring the music of Kronos Quartet. The festival, which runs from 3 to 9 p.m., will also feature cellist Teddy Rankin Parker performing music by Michael Beharry, Ryan Brown's Mortal Lessons, Ramon and Jessica's Roses Are Blue, the San Francisco Conservatory Percussion Quartet, as well as the group's Billy Goat, Splinter Reeds, and a return performance by, as I mentioned, the Kronos Quartet that's happening on June 10th at Z-Space. I'm joined by the aforementioned composer Ryan Brown, who is represented on this year's festival, who also happens to be the co-founder and executive director of Switchboard Music. The Washington City paper has described his music as nimble, expressive, ear-turning, and strange in an accessible way. Perhaps we'll hear a sample during our conversation. Ryan's music has been performed across the country and around the world by groups that include the Kronos Quartet, Grammy winners Roomful of Teeth, the Crash Ensemble, Brooklyn Philharmonic, and the New York Phil's first biennial, as well as many others. In addition to composing, Ryan is also active as both an electric guitarist and electric bassist. With a PhD from Princeton University, he is also a graduate of California State University Long Beach and the San Francisco Conservatory of Music, where he is currently an associate dean as well. A pleasure to welcome you, Ryan, to Open Air.
Thanks, David. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Well, 10 years. Wow. That's an accomplishment in itself.
Yeah, it is. It feels great. And, you know, when we started it, like many things, you know, we couldn't have imagined it happening for this long, of course. And, you know, really the idea at the time was just to bring attention to and present music that our friends were making and that we were making that didn't have a real home at the time because of this kind of genre-bending quality that it had. And it's been really remarkable over 10 years to see that change in the Bay Area and across the country, around the world, really, where the idea of something blurring genre lines is just taken for granted now.
Indeed. Well, there's lots of outlets for new music here in the Bay Area. What do you see Switchboard as particularly filling? Which niche?
Yeah, well, you know, part of it is just how we talk about it. I mean, new music can, within the classical music sphere, be heard with capital letters, right? New music, and it's considered a certain branch of classical music. For us, the idea has always been to present that that music that's at the cutting edge of multiple genres. So not just coming from a classical tradition, but what's happening in jazz that's really pushing the limits of that definition or that label, and what's happening in world music that's doing the same, and more importantly, how are all these things pushing towards each other? And of course, what's happening in the classical music tradition is part of that, but from the beginning, we've always wanted to present a broader spectrum of new music from multiple genres and multiple communities.
And always wonderful to have good friends of KLW, the Kronos Quartet, involved.
Yeah, of course. I mean, Kronos, you know, they've been doing this for so long. They've really laid so much of the groundwork for what we're doing and, you know, hundreds of other groups and organizations like ours. And, you know, the fact that they're local, like 95% of our programming is, only makes them, you know, even better fit.
And a piece of your own is going to be featured on this year's festival.
Yeah, I'm really excited to be presenting this piece. It's called Mortal Lessons. It's this is a half-hour version of what will ultimately be an hour-long piece. I call it a medical oratorio because I don't really have a better way to describe it. It's not quite an opera. It's not really musical theater in a Broadway sense. But it's more of a meditation on surgery and medicine as kind of a modern ritual and the surgeon as a modern priest. And this is all based on a book also called Mortal Lessons by Richard Selzer, who is a surgeon at the Yale Medical Center. And the book is a series of memoirs and kind of meditative essays on the body and what it means to, you know, have such an intimate relationship with someone and to know the body so well and still be in awe of all of its mysteries.
Well, let's hear a little bit of that, and then we'll talk more with Ryan Brown. Here is music of Ryan Brown, part of the Switchboard Music Festival next week. Hold on. Taste of Mortal Lessons from Ryan Brown, featured on the 10th concert of the Switchboard Festival. Ryan is the artistic director for 10 years now of the Switchboard Festival. Some good stuff there, Ryan.
Yeah, thanks.
And is that the same ensemble that's going to be performing for us on the 10th?
No, so this piece was actually called Pinched, and it was written for Splinter Reeds, who is our second-to-last set on the festival. So that's Reed Quintet, so we'll definitely be hearing lots of great music by them, and then go right into Kronos after that.
Oh, my apologies, I miscued that one.
No problem, yeah. It's still my music, which is great.
That's great, yeah. And so how did this this group, the clarinet wind, the Reed Quintet, get together and get on your radar?
Yeah, well, they are a group of, Reed players, all of whom were in the Bay Area at some point and have since many have relocated, but they all formed as kind of a subset of the San Francisco Contemporary Players and formed this all-star Reed Quintet, which is kind of a rare combination of instruments, and have been actively commissioning new repertoire for this instrumentation. And the bass clarinetist in the group, Jeff Anderley, is also a co-founder and co-director of Switchboard as well. So, you know, we each wear multiple hats and get to be involved on multiple levels with Switchboard, which is really exciting for us.
Fantastic. And what, again, is the participation level of Kronos in this particular concert?
So they'll be headlining for the second time. They were on a few years back. And, you know, true to their mission and their, you know, their programming, tons of premieres on this concert, including pieces from their 50 for the Future program, in which they're commissioning 50 pieces, which will be available online for other quartets to play. So they'll be playing 6 different pieces, almost all of which were written for them or arranged for them.
The fun gets underway on the 10th at 3 in the afternoon at Z-Space for Switchboard's 10th Anniversary Festival. Ryan Brown, thanks so much for telling us about it.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll look forward to spending part of the day there, at least. I don't know about for the old 8 hours. We'll see.
Well, I hope to see you.
All right, getting underway at 3 o'clock with Paul Lansky's Threads and Selections from Steve Reich's drumming. The Switchboard 10 Festival will also feature, as we mentioned, Splinter Reeds and headlined by the Kronos Quartet, whose concert's contribution gets underway at 8 o'clock. Also, Billy Goat, a two-man band who animate, compose, and score their own stop-motion films. That should be interesting. That's at 6:10. And then the 10th birthday party will be at 6:40 in the lobby, featuring some free cake and beer if you're 21 and over, plus an installation of interactive musical instruments designed by Dennis Harmon. The Switchboard 10 Music Festival, information at switchboardmusic.com. Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't acknowledge a great Bay Area treasure today on her birthday. Frederica von Stade was born in Somerville, New Jersey, and she is affectionately known as Flicka, which a name that she acquired in her childhood. Her father was a polo champion and lieutenant in the United States Army who was killed in service in Germany during the Second World War, just even prior to her birth. She attended the Manus College of Music in New York City, where she also still maintains a relationship, and her debut at the Metropolitan Opera in 1970 and 71, where she appeared as Cherubino in La Nozze di Figaro. Cherubino remained her most celebrated signature role, which she sang at her European debut in Versailles in 1973, which really was the launching point of her international career. She's also been a great fan of local composer Jake Heggie, championing his music, and in her time on the concert and recording stage, she's made over 60 recordings, including complete operas, aria albums, symphonic works, solo recital programs, and popular crossover albums. Here she is singing Rusalka from Dvorak's incredible opera. beautiful voice of Frederica von Stade. Happy birthday, Flicka, from your friends here at KLW. The Song to the Moon from Dvorak's opera Rusalka, sung by birthday girl Frederica von Stade. I'm David Latulippe. You've been listening to Open Air here on local public radio, KALW. Our shows are archived at kalw.org. You can send me a show segment suggestion by email, david@kalw.org. And my thanks to Niels Swinkels for producing the show. Peter Robinson will be sitting in for me next week. I hope you'll enjoy that show.